From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. It is a Thursday for some reason.
It took me
three times to get an intro in today, and it's really very out of character. We hardly ever have to hit a stop button for anything, whether it be an instant analysis or a podcast or whatnot with a microphone in our faces. So today, usually we talk to Jeffrey. We're not talking to Jeffrey today. I know some of you are upset. Some of you are throwing confetti up in the air, but that's okay. We'll try to get him on for tomorrow. I know he's taking a golf trip, but we'll try to catch him prior to that.
It's not looking likely
that we're going to catch Jeffrey before
that
he leaves.
That is correct.
Okay.
The odds are stacked against us.
Are they?
And as this afternoon progresses with each passing hour, the odds will increasingly stack against us to the point of the odds being insurmountable.
Okay. Today, instead, though, you get a couple guests. You get Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. He's going to talk some Arkansas baseball, some Arkansas football, and the like. You know, we've known each other for a long time. So get that content to you soon. Also, today is Major League Baseball opening day.
Woo!
So you get Dane Perry of CBS.
Yes.
I know he's been on the Beer Garden before. I believe this is his debut on the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
It is.
So a lot of Major League Baseball talk as well with Dane. So a lot of stuff.
We literally went through every division. We talked about some topics. If you are a Cardinals fan, a Braves fan, a Phillies fan, a Cubs fan, an Astros fan, a Yankees fan, a Red Sox fan, we touch on your team.
A Twins fan.
Touch on the Twins.
Do you?
We do.
Okay. So Dane Perry coming up as well.
The Tampa, Baltimore. We touched on a lot of stuff.
Every team.
Nationals.
Almost. Mariners.
Did not touch on the Mariners.
Guy lives in Oxford in the offseason. You can't even touch on the Mariners.
I know.
Yeah.
He's not here now.
He's not here now. No. Yeah. He's probably in the Pacific Northwest. So the podcast brought to you by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Coming into town for the baseball series, stop in. Get a lunch special, $4.99. Get some ribs. Maybe even after the game, if it ends up getting rained out tonight, you can get ribs on the way home if you would so choose with the Oxford Exxon. Also, I've been telling you, I want to tell you again, Chad Kelly coming next Saturday prior to the Grove Bowl. I think it's 9:30 to 11. He will be at the Oxford Exxon for his first signing as a Denver Bronco. But even if you're not interested in that, just come say hello because everybody walks through the door. $5 to the Magnolia Speech School in Jackson. So great calls to help out there with the Oxford Exxon. Neil's looking up some weather right now. I really think it's okay tonight, but it's getting worse today than it was last night.
Here's the deal. It's going to rain until around 10:45 this morning.
Okay.
It's going to fall off a little. It's going to come back and rain around the noon hour till about 2-ish. Then it's going to clear out. There's a little possibility. It's 45 to 50%, 6, 7 o'clock. It drops to 35% at 8 o'clock to 25% at 9 o'clock. I think the odds are they play the game. What time's first pitch scheduled?
6:30, I think.
You made me. If you told me that it didn't get started till 7, I wouldn't be shocked. Just because of wet, but I think they're going to get it in. That's what she said.
6:30, 6:30, 1:30. The times for the three games this weekend.
Tomorrow's fine.
Saturday's fine.
Saturday is fine. And for the people that keep asking about Sunday, the SEC rules will not allow them to play on Sunday when the series
is scheduled. It is a dumb rule, but you have from whenever the series starts, 3 days.
Yes, it is a dumb rule. If you would like to argue about the stupidity of the rule, go for it. However, those of you who continue to engage me about the rule, it is the rule. They will not play a game on Sunday.
No. Guess you could get a waiver from the SEC office, but that's not likely.
I suppose you could, but as of this moment, no one has filed a waiver.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
And those waivers are not typically granted
not
unless
typically.
School is out.
That is correct.
School's not out Monday.
No.
All right.
It's out tomorrow.
It is, but not Monday.
I guess it's out in Arkansas tomorrow.
Probably, but not Monday.
No.
And Monday is the key date on the Sunday thing.
So, some baseball content up at Rebel Grove. I kind of nerded out, looked at some stats and different things last night. You can see that on our website. We have one, rebelgrove.com. Also,
John Summerall, a video interview with John Summerall, the linebackers coach. It's really good, actually. I typically would write that. I filmed it because I had a feeling he would be good, and he was. So it's up. I will have more content from football to you over the next couple of days. There's no media opportunity again until Tuesday. So there's no reason to just, as we say in the business, vomit it up at you. So we'll get it to you over time. It's a good interview. I'll probably go back and transcribe some of it for a couple of stories I'm working on. Interesting. If you have the ability to read between the lines, he tells you a lot about their linebacker core. He tells you a lot if you have the ability to interpret nuance and coach speak. He tells you a ton. And I asked him a question that set up a ton. I said, what do you look for in recruiting? You should listen to that answer. He tells you a ton.
It's called a tease, ladies and gentlemen, in the business.
I was really impressed with him. I've loved watching him coach at practice because dude's intense.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the intense guy in front of a microphone, I'm just going to be honest here, is a freaking meathead. Not this guy. He dials it back and is pretty intellectual about his position and very real. I mean, I know he did some interviews at Troy, and he played at Kentucky, so it's not like the Ole Miss media contingent's going to freak him out. But a lot of times, the first time for coaches when they get in front of media like that, they get real cliche and just get out. He was in-depth with his answers. It was really good and tells you a lot about what he inherited and what he's looking for.
Full story for another day, but I mean, the Rivals media contingent scared the crap out of Drew Henson back in the day in Vegas.
Yeah.
To the point of I thought he was going to pass out.
I know. Here's a guy that had played quarterback at Michigan
and played
for the New York Yankees and the Dallas Cowboys.
He was scared to death.
He was terrified of a bunch of fat dudes in a room in Vegas.
Yeah.
That was bizarre.
Yeah, again, full story later because we're a little time crunch today. But
God, I almost forgot that. That was unreal.
Uh-huh. I've never seen someone more freaked out public speaking, sort of.
I mean, it's what you would have expected from a 10-year-old boy said, here, go speak to these people about, like, citizenship or something. And he'd be like, The former quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys who has played Major League Baseball for the New York Yankees.
Yes.
They get covered by media, the Yankees do.
They do, yeah.
Anyway, we're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's real easy. You get your quote, you can shop it, or you can get your quote and let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of our podcast. That's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. Make it even better. Mention any of our podcast to Corey. So that's where I heard about Clark Ford. I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention the Beer Garden. You can mention the Soft Verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. That's going to drop later today. You can mention the Greatest Pod in the South, presented by Cathead Distillery with me and Jay Tate. That dropped yesterday. Mention any of those, $500 off the bottom line from your deal at Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
So we'll start. Where are you going to start today? What are you going to do? What are we doing? What's the?
We probably should start with Tom because it's Ole Miss, Arkansas.
More pertinent.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll get Tom Murphy now again. One caveat to this interview. At the time of the taping, Arkansas had not released their middle pitcher for the weekend.
Right.
They have now Ethan Lee, a left-handed sophomore that also actually hits some too. So I'll be curious to see what they do with the lineup if they don't have a DH tonight.
And he addresses him somewhat in this interview. He talked about the options and included him.
He's going to throw tonight or tomorrow night, sorry, against Brady Feigl Friday night, middle game of the series. And he's pitched 8.2 innings so far this season. He's allowed 10 hits, 5 runs. Walked a few, struck out a few. So it probably is going to profile a lot like Garrett Crochet, the first guy for Tennessee a couple weekends ago. It's sort of kind of what he's like. I'll look at it more in depth tomorrow. But anyway, just that one caveat is that decision has been made. They're going Blaine Knight tonight, Ethan Lee tomorrow, and then Casey Murphy to finish the weekend off on Saturday, finish the weekend on Saturday. So now on the Billy's Pecans Hotline, Tom Murphy, Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
All right, Tom, really appreciate you joining the podcast. I know you got a busy day, so we'll get right to it. Arkansas and Ole Miss starting, I guess when people hear this, starting tonight in Oxford. Obviously, Isaiah Campbell, he's out. How does his absence affect Arkansas's pitching staff this weekend, in your opinion?
Well, they came into the season looking like a pretty deep staff, but there's some guys that haven't performed very well. And they're still trying to nail down their Sunday starters. That's still up in the air. So what it does is it's going to put somebody who's only started, you know, midweek games or maybe a rare Sunday into a starting position. And they used one of their better pitchers, a freshman named Jackson Rutledge, to close out the victory over Memphis on Tuesday, an 8-7 game. And I think he got 4 outs in the game. So he might be able – he had been mentioned as a guy who could start the middle game against Ole Miss. I don't know if they'll do that now. Another guy who was mentioned, a freshman named Bryce Bonin, also pitched against Memphis. So it could be that they use a kid named Evan Lee, who's got a pretty high ERA, but they like his competitiveness, to come in on Saturday or on Friday. And the reason they're not moving Casey Murphy up, who's been very solid for them and pitched pretty well against Florida – although he got his first loss in that game on Sunday, they're not moving him up because it's an earlier series for Easter, and he would he'd be pitching with 4 days rest on his 5th day. So Murphy will go Saturday, and my guess is Evan Lee, or they might run Rutledge back out for Friday. And it does hurt their depth. A guy like Jake Reindl, he started against Memphis and did not have a good outing. They're trying to get him right. So he may be limited to a very brief appearance in the Ole Miss series if he pitches at all. And so it's just the domino effect with the full staff.
Yeah, I can see that. It also limits your ability to kind of do the whole Johnny whole staff thing when your staff is down some. Arkansas leads the league in home runs right now. Was that surge expected? And then for Arkansas, kind of as they head into the series against a pretty good Ole Miss team, how imperative is the long ball for that offense?
It's been a pretty big part. They really should have gotten a series win against Florida last weekend, but they struggled with runners in scoring position. So they're in the midst of what would have been a 9-game road trip. One of the games got rained out at Charlotte midweek last week. Then they lose to them in their campus stadium and lose 2 out of 3 to Florida. But they, with their runners in scoring position, they hit so poorly. And that had been a little bit of a trend breaker for them because they'd hit pretty well. And then against Memphis, they turned that back around. And I think they went 4-for-7 with runners in scoring position. Oh, no, they went 5-for-9. So they got it turned back around. I think they scored all their runs with 2 outs. But that's against a different style of staff. The influx of these freshmen has really helped in terms of power. I mean, they've got a right-handed batter, Casey Martin, a real fast kid who's hit 7 home runs. He's leading the team. And another freshman, Heston Kerstad, wait till you see this kid play. He's a left fielder. He's hit 6 home runs. So those two have accounted for 13 of their 47. And then it's spread throughout the lineup. Some, you know, old heads like Carson Shaddy and Luke Bonfield have hit some, and the catcher, Grant Cook. But it's spread throughout the lineup. And they've wailed on some – mediocre pitching staffs and a couple of pretty good staff. In Kentucky, what they did that weekend, unbelievable 13 home runs. It is a big part of their offense, and it can come throughout. I mean, Kerstad did his damage, I think, in the 8-hole against Florida. So pretty solid hitting team, hitting .311 overall.
Kerstad, he's, like you said, leading Arkansas in hitting. He was a good recruit, but he was not one of those elite guys that the whole country recruited. What's let him succeed early on at this level?
Well, here's the story on him. When they got interested in Kerstad, he stood 5'10". And I think now he's 6'3". And I also think he had an injury like his senior year. So I think that prevented some, you know, the big-time influx of the biggest schools in the country. But he grew into his body, and he's fast. So he's been a sensation. He's hitting .395 with 6 homers, 27 RBIs. Defense has been okay. But a great kid from Amarillo, Texas, who's reminds me of Howdy Doody when we talk to him. So he's just one of the new – the influx of new guys they've had has been really nice to pair with the veterans. I mentioned Jackson Rutledge as a pitcher earlier, Bryce Bonin. They got a couple more kids. Caleb Bolden, he'd be a guy who might be a candidate to start the Friday game against Ole Miss and the hitters that we've talked about.
Blaine Knight's been terrific in opening games of series. When he does get in trouble, Tom, what does that look like? And then when the teams have been able to scrape runs against him, kind of how are they doing it?
His trouble is usually defined by this. He gets mad. He pitched against Cal Poly second weekend of the season out in San Diego, and he thought he was getting squeezed. They called a 22nd ball on him when Dave Van Horn was on the field doing like an interview, one of those headset interviews, and he got a 22nd call, and that ticked him off, and it gets in his head in a little bit. I think he had a balk in that game, and there's some errors behind him, and they end up losing 4-3. He wasn't the pitcher of record, but it was a tight, low-scoring game, and he works a little bit slowly. So, you know, that whole saying, if pitchers work fast, it keeps the fielders on their toes. Well, he works the opposite, and there's been some defensive lapses behind him. Is that a direct correlation? I don't know. But he's a very intense guy, and I think the thing that gets him the worst is if he feels like he's getting squeezed, that gets in his head a little bit. But he has been sensational. His ERA, I'm looking at it right now, is 183, and he's 4-0. So he had a no decision against Kentucky. He came out after 4 1/3. They were leading, but he got hit on the ankle, left ankle, by a comebacker and got into a little bit of trouble in the fifth, and they pulled him. And in the Cal Poly game, he got a no decision. Otherwise, he's won all the rest.
Arkansas is near the bottom of the league in fielding. It's a small sample size because obviously it's just 20-something games. You've seen it. Is that just a statistical aberration, or is that a liability for this team?
I think right now it's be termed more a liability. They've missed some cutoffs. Some guys have not cut balls that have then surprised the backup guy and it got behind him. I know that led to some runs in the second game against Florida, which was a runaway game. But the Cal Poly game I mentioned, errors hurt him. Kerstad lost a fly ball in the sun, and that wasn't counted as an error, but it led to two early runs. Otherwise, Blaine Knight didn't give up a run in that game. But there's been some games, some tight games, that defensive lapses have proved costly to them. And even though you're right, it's a relatively small sample size, there's been enough errors on this team to say that they're not a great fielding team. I think they're still a pretty good fielding team. But they've given up, I'm looking at this right now, of all their runs they've given up, 108, 82 are earned. So that's 26 unearned runs. That's about a quarter of their runs right there. A little bit less than a quarter of their runs have been unearned.
Yeah, that's pretty significant. All right, last thing. I'd be remiss if I had you on and I didn't ask you at least a little bit about football. I know you got a day full, so we'll keep this just to 2 or 3 minutes. Brett Bielema is gone. Chad Morris is in. The stuff I'd be interested in, how's he different to cover? Our listeners wouldn't care. It's obviously a completely different offense from the one that Bielema tried to run at Arkansas. How has it looked so far? And then just what's the, I guess, the excitement / confidence level in Arkansas with Morris right now?
Well, my take is there's not going to be just some miraculous turnaround for next year just on the whole, because you're still dealing with a lot of the same talent they had and a bad defense that might get marginally better, but I don't think it's going to be extremely better. I do think they're going to get more pressure on quarterbacks. John Chavis, that's kind of his calling card. Even if they have to sell out and go with six guys on the rush sometimes. So I think they'll be prone to disrupting quarterbacks more, possibly causing a few more turnovers, but also giving up some big plays. I think they'll be a marginally better tackling team. On offense, I did a story on this a couple of weeks ago, so my numbers aren't going to be exact, but I think they're going to average probably about 10 more plays per game than a Brett Bielema offense, or at least SMU under Chad Morris average about 10 more plays. They're going to get plays off quicker in the play clock, and just try to do what up-tempo teams do, you know, try to make an alignment error or get somebody kind of tired and exploit matchups. And Chad Morris has brought a level of excitement because of their social media awareness. They've been out there, and, you know, they've got all these things now, hammer down, left lane, and a full tilt boogie. So I think they're going to score bigger recruits. I think they're going to get some receivers in here and some quarterbacks that are attracted by the style of offense, and that'll help them. But they say they still want to be kind of a downhill run team. We'll see how that all plays out. We haven't had a whole lot of chances to see them in action. Today is a modified scrimmage, so it's a partial day of scrimmaging, and we're going to see the whole thing. So for the timing of this interview, you know, it would have been better tomorrow for me to be able to say, this is what I saw yesterday.
Yeah.
But we've seen them a little bit. I think there's a quarterback battle here. A lot of people might have assumed that Cole Kelly, the big 6'7 kid from Lafayette, Louisiana, would be the starter. He was 2-2, won the game against Ole Miss last year and beat Coastal Carolina, both nail-biter type games. But, you know, they got blown out by Alabama and Auburn with him at quarterback. I think he's in a bit of a battle with Ty Story. He's a junior who I think really attacks the game planning and the checks at the line and all those types of things you have to do with a little more intensity maybe than Cole Kelly. They want their quarterbacks to run, so maybe that favors Kelly a little bit. But I think Ty Story has been a lot better with ball security so far. And they've just passed the halfway part of spring camp. And I don't know who's going to be the guy next year. And it may be that they try to play both of them and see what happens in game situations.
I got to tell you, it's going to be weird as a guy that, you know, sees Arkansas live once a year for it not to be an Allen at quarterback. I'm going to keep looking for an Allen at quarterback because it feels like there's been one there for about 10 years. I know it wasn't really that long, but that was they owned that position for a bit there in Fayetteville, and it's still going to be weird for me to see it. No Brett Bielema, no Allen at quarterback.
It is very strange. Think about it. In football years, 5 years of having Allen's, that's a long time. And you go back to John L. Smith when you had somebody other than Brandon Allen and Austin Allen.
Yeah.
You're going back to the Tyler Wilson days. So it is going to be strange. And I'm going to say right now, I'm not sure quarterback's going to be a huge asset for Arkansas next year. I mean, maybe it will be. And I know they want to get the ball out quickly and get it in the hands of playmakers. But these guys, I think, are going to have to be a lot better than what we've seen so far for quarterback to be a real plus situation for the Razorbacks.
Yeah, Ole Miss and Arkansas meet in Little Rock. I think it's in early October, maybe late September, early October.
I think that's right.
And for both teams, it's for Ole Miss. There's a lot of Ole Miss fans that talk about getting to, like, you know, 8 wins, and frankly, 8 wins has to include a win over Arkansas, or it just probably doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I know Arkansas looks at that Ole Miss game and says, "Hey, for us to get where we have to go, we got to win that one." There's both of those teams probably look at the Alabamas and the Auburns, and they won't admit it out loud, but they say that those are probably not wins. So you've got to find wins elsewhere. So that will make that game pretty interesting, because it's always interesting whenever Ole Miss and Arkansas play. It feels like it always comes down to, like, the last play or two of the game. The last, God, several years, it's just been nail biters.
Yeah, that's right. And without the Ole Miss game last year, Arkansas goes winless in conference, even though they had Mississippi State in position to win, and they had Missouri certainly had a chance to win. So, yeah, I would say that that has been one of the best little underrated rivalries going on in the SEC in the last few years. There hadn't been a whole lot at stake other than the Henry Heave year that Ole Miss could have gone to the conference title game, but that's the one team that Brett Bielema seemed to be able to beat in the last few years.
Yeah, he owned Ole Miss. He owned them by the skin of his teeth, but he owned them. There's no question about that. So those are that and that Henry Heave game remains the craziest thing I think I've ever seen live. It's hard to believe that happened. I mean, you like to watch the video of it, and you're like, wow, that play could have gone squirrely about 10 different spots in that one play, or one of those just crazy plays that people will be talking about 50 years from now.
No question. You and I could do a separate podcast just on the game or the play itself. I think I heard a Mississippi guy say, I think some guys gave up on the play. I disagree with that. What I see, I mean, I think it was Bridges on the tackle. He was trying to get Hunter Henry down.
Yeah.
Another guy was running at him. As soon as Henry heaved it, a bunch of Ole Miss defenders were running to the ball. There were guys at the end of the play trying to get Alex Collins down. And it's just so crazy in so many levels, because there was a couple of Ole Miss guys on the sidelines starting to raise their hands up in victory,
yeah,
including Hugh Freeze.
Yeah.
Arkansas had to recover Collins' ill-advised lateral, because he thought they had to score a touchdown.
That's the part of the play that is so crazy, is if you think about it, all that happened, and Arkansas gets a first down, and I think Alex Collins was confused about down and distance, or maybe confused about where he was on the field at that point, which is certainly understandable. And he kind of laterals the ball, and if an Ole Miss guy picks up the ball after all that crazy stuff, it's just a failed conversion, and Ole Miss wins the game. It could have. That's what I'm saying. There's, like you said, we could do a half hour podcast on that play alone, and it would be, and what it meant for the Ole Miss program, and what it could have meant, and all of those things. Just it's remarkable. One of those plays that will just kind of live forever.
Yeah, it will. And yeah, Collins thought he had to score a touchdown. That's why he lateraled the ball.
Yeah.
So, mental mistake. And Hunter Henry, you could see him on the video raise his hands up like, ah, we came so close, not knowing that they had just converted a first down. So, and of course, there was still the two-point conversion to go when Ole Miss had Brandon Allen dead to rights. So, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, man, as always, I know you got stuff to do. Really appreciate your time. I kept you a good 7 or 8 minutes longer than I said I would. So, thanks so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Enjoyed it, Neil. Thanks.
Thanks to Tom for giving us a little bit of time there this morning on the show, a show that is brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773, or MasterCutsLawn.com. Getting a washing outside right now, but it's not a pressure washing. Still need to get things cleaned up around your house. Sign an annual contract. They'll do the driveway and sidewalks for free with MasterCut, and you get all their great services from edging and mowing and weed eating and whatnot. Also, if you're in a location where you need pressure washing of more than 2,000 square feet, $50 off when you mention the podcast. 662-607-7773.
Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry's an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than 4 decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. HarryAlexander.com. Send him an email, ha@HarryAlexander.com. Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is offering one-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield, three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With that three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, Check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
Podcast also brought to you by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Settle County, and Chattanooga. Our underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you can look on underwriting that understands your market. Also a leader in condo financing and the float down option. 662-234-2704 or JLO, J-L-O-W-E at CommunityMTG.com. Let's jump right back into it. Let's talk to Dane Perry now of CBS. A lot of Major League Baseball for the next half hour or so. So let's go to that now.
All right, Dane, welcome into the show. I appreciate you taking some time on what will be opening day when people hear this. So I know this is a busy time for you. And I'm guessing in your home, I read that your wife is a Loyola alum.
That's right, man. That's right. So I'm going to be pulling for the Ramblers in the Final Four on Saturday. So pretty exciting. She sort of cares, you know. I mean, she's starting to care more and more. But I'm the one who has been kind of following them. So as an Ole Miss fan, it's good to see some relevant hoops this time of year. So why not? I'll just latch on to the Loyola bandwagon.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how big of a fan is she? And then as the tournament has gone on, how much more of a fan has she become?
You know, somewhat. You know, I'm definitely more into it than she is. But, she's starting to get excited about it. You know, likes the sister Jean story and all that. But she did admit that she never went to a basketball game while she was there. So I'm not sure how much she can claim fandom, but she's, you know, I'm working on her. We'll see. We'll get her there.
It's the fun part of the tournament. I mean, when stuff like that happens, the whole sister Jean story is just, it's just awesome. Has she ever met sister Jean?
Yeah, it's pretty great. No, I she was there. Yeah, you know, she may have met her at some point. She doesn't really recall. She was there during her days, but she does not recall if she ever met her personally. But you know, in spirit, they're certainly bonded. Yeah.
All right.
I know how this usually goes. They're probably going to get wrecked by Michigan, but they made it there, which is already a miracle. So. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know, it's Loyola, it's Easter weekend, it's, I mean, there's a lot, there's Sister Jean, there's a lot there kind of working for them. If they get wrecked by Michigan, you know that the basketball gods just have no heart at all.
Yeah, or, you know, maybe they just used up all their resources or something, I'm not sure, but, you know, it's already been a lot of fun no matter how it goes from here.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a story those kids will have for the rest of their lives. That's the fun part. All right, let's talk some baseball. We're getting started tomorrow. I guess I'll start with this. It feels early to start the season, March the 29th, but I know it allows some days off to be built into the schedule. I'm guessing around baseball that's pretty much appreciated by players.
Yeah, I mean, that was bargained in the last collective bargaining agreement to have additional off days baked into the schedule. So that's something they kind of had to do. And so that's, you know, and of course, World Series, it seems it keeps getting pushed back and back into November and that sort of thing. So that's also a concern on the other end of things. But this is all by design. And yeah, it's a little early, particularly in some of the northern cities. But it's, you know, they got, well, Cincinnati's going to get rained out. But otherwise, they would have had every team play on opening day, which is really nice. That hasn't happened since, I think, like 68 or something like that. So that's a really nice change.
Yeah, it used to be Cincinnati had the first pitch of the season. Now it's the Miami Marlins against the Cubs. We'll get to that in a minute. I want to start in the American League, though. I want to start with Houston. They won the World Series. On paper, they're better this year than they were a year ago. All the core guys are more experienced. They've got a full season of Justin Verlander. They go out in the offseason. They add Garrett Cole. I thought they bolstered the middle part of their bullpen pretty well. Guys like Hector Rondon, just to kind of give their bullpen some depth. Bregman's up for a full season. On paper, they just look terrific. Yet a year ago, we watched both the Cubs and the Indians kind of have a World Series hangover. I know that the Astros are saying there won't be a World Series hangover. It's easy to say there won't be one. Do you anticipate that they'll have one? And what do you? When you look at them, is there any team that you could classify as the favorite in the American League other than Houston?
I think you can make an argument for the Indians if they have rotation health. But, I mean, this is, you know, the Astros, they won 100-plus games last season and the World Series with, you know, just getting, you know, a month in the postseason out of Justin Verlander. Carlos Correa missed like a third of the season after thumb surgery. They had a, you know, and Gerrit Cole, of course, wasn't in the fold back then. So they had a few things that didn't go their way, and they still had just an outstanding season. So this is, again, going to be, you know, probably the odds-on pick for the best team in baseball. But, you know, I mean, this is never a satisfactory answer, but it's just the reality of baseball. You just don't know what's going to happen in the playoffs. It's a short series. There's so much built-in randomness in baseball that it's just a fool's errand to predict what's going to happen. And, yeah, the Astros could get bounced, you know, in a surprise upset or what have you. It's just the nature of the game in the postseason when you have these short series. So, you know, I like the Astros. I think they'll probably have the most wins in the regular season. I picked the Indians to win it all because, you know, just why the hell not? Just pick a team in the playoffs.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of randomness to those outcomes. So, yeah, the Astros could not win the World Series, and it wouldn't necessarily be because they're a worse team.
I think Cleveland's a terrific team. If the baseball gods came down and told you, hey, Cleveland doesn't get it done, what would you say would be their downfall?
Just a short postseason series not going their way, or maybe running into the Astros at the wrong time, that kind of thing. I mean, you know, you're looking at what's probably going to be a stacked American League bracket once again. Red Sox or Yankees are probably going to win the East. The team that doesn't is probably going to be a wild card. The second wild card could be a pretty solid team from somewhere, but your division winners in the American League are probably going to be certifiable juggernauts, and either one can knock out the other one. So just running into the wrong team at the wrong time is probably what would do the Indians in. I think there's very little chance that they don't win the division, but the playoffs are weird, man.
Are the Twins a pitcher short? I mean, I like a lot of the things they did. They flirted with the idea of going after Darvish, going after Cobb. They didn't get either one of them, obviously. Their rotation's a little thin. I like a lot of their team, but there's just not enough there to overcome Cleveland, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, the Twins, they kind of overplayed their run differential last season. Just as concern on that front. You know, is Irvin Santana going to be fully healthy this season and able to repeat what he did last year? I like their team. I like that they're gunning for it. I like the Lance Lynn addition, particularly at those just that basement level salary they were able to get him for, like the Odorizzi addition, like some of their hitters. I think Byron Buxton's got, you know, MVP potential here in the next handful of seasons. Bullpen's a little thin. They're just not as strong as the Indians, and I think that play the fray for the second wild card berth, which I think the Twins are going to be the mix for, is going to be a pretty crowded one. And, you know, and if you get in that knockout game in the playoffs, it's just, you know, we've seen teams make it out of the wild card into the World Series, but it's hard to do, and I just don't know. I see that kind of roster strength in Minnesota.
So New York has Aaron Boone as the manager. Boston has Cora, Alex Cora. Does that matter at all, the whole first-year manager thing? Is that overplayed, or will both of those guys sort of figure it out in enough time with the talent that they have on their rosters that they'll be fine?
I think, you know, in baseball, relative certainly to basketball and football, the manager/head coach has less influence in baseball than they do in the other sports. It's about talent in any sport, but I think particularly in baseball, where you're so tactically limited into what you can do, you know, you can't run a 5-out motion offense or, you know, run the spread or whatever in baseball. You're kind of limited to what you can do in that regard. What you do is put the best guys in a position to succeed, run a smooth clubhouse, and, you know, don't screw up in the dugout from 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock. And I think these guys are capable of doing that. And, you know, again, it's just, I think the extent to which you can mess up or make a team play better than they are in baseball is pretty limited. So I think these guys will do fine.
I've watched Boston a lot this spring, and I'm not sure why. And I kind of caught myself liking their team. It doesn't appear to, especially since J.D. Martinez joined, there doesn't appear to be any major flaw with their team. I haven't seen the Yankees as much. I know that lineup is just absolutely stacked, and they add the you know, Gleyber Torres and guys like that as the season goes on. Is one of those teams potentially significantly better than the other, or are they in many ways kind of, I know they're different, but are they somewhat, you know, different but equal, if you will?
you know, assuming general health on both sides, I think that's a coin flip. I picked the Red Sox, but I don't feel very confident about it. The addition of Martinez addresses a pretty glaring weakness from last season. I think they're going to get more out of David Price this year. You know, Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley, and Xander Bogaerts all kind of had down years with the bat. I think those guys could all bounce back. I think Benintendi could take the next step. The Red Sox are really, really good. I know the Yankees have kind of been get all the attention, but you know, the Red Sox have won the last two division titles there, and they're a really strong team. And I think they're going to edge out the Yankees, but I expect both of these teams to be, you know, in the mid-90s in terms of wins. And I think it's really going to be a classic race, the American League East this year, and you can, you know, just kind of flip a coin. But those are two powerhouses in that division.
Staying in that division for a minute, two teams that I think could impact what happens in October, not by what they do on the field, but what they do maybe off the field. Does Manny Machado finish the season in Baltimore? And the same question about Chris Archer in Tampa. Do those guys stay where they are, or are they the two of the big trade chips that are on the market in late July?
You know, I'm going to say that Archer gets traded just because I think that's the direction the Rays are moving in a bit more strong than the Orioles are. I can see the Orioles kind of hanging around within, you know, a handful of games with a second wild card berth and deciding to keep it together and deciding that, you know, giving Machado the qualifying offer and get a draft pick is enough to, you know, justify taking a shot at making the playoffs with his last year there. So I'm going to just say, just kind of based on nothing, I'm not privy to any information there, but I'm going to say that Machado sticks and that I think the wheels are going to come off in Tampa this season. I think that's, you know, all the pitching injuries plus all the value they traded away, I think they're going to be a pretty bad team. And I think Archer, you know, we see a lot of inflation in terms of what teams can get in exchange for, you know, a frontline starting pitcher at the trade deadline. So I think the Rays are going to give into that temptation to move him, especially with the kind of team-friendly contract that he has.
What do you make, if anything, out of Shohei Ohtani's struggles this spring? If you're an Angels fan, how much are you worried about what he was not able to do in March?
Yeah, you're a little worried, maybe a little more worried than you would be if this is just another player who's been in the majors before. I mean, this is an adjustment for him. He's never faced, at least on a large sample basis, major league hitters. But the skills are there, and the skills tend to win out. He's still young. There's probably some nerves going on. There's probably some getting used to the routine going on. There's also having his attentions divided between hitting and pitching, which I'm not sure is going to be sustainable from the best baseball league in the world over the long haul. You're a little worried, but I would bet on the skills, and I would bet on the results in Japan, which is, you know, stronger than AAA, not major league quality, but stronger than AAA. So that's a really, really competitive circuit. I bet on the results there. I bet on the skills. I think he's going to have a nice season.
We'll stay in Los Angeles and switch to the National League. We'll start there. How big of a deal is it for the Dodgers that they open the season without Justin Turner?
It's, you know, potentially a big deal. I still think there's some separation between them and the rest of the division. I think the Rockies and Diamondbacks may both take a step back this season. So I think there's still some cushion there for the Dodgers. It's certain, you know, to state the obvious, it's better to lose them at the outset than at the end of the season. And I think I just think there's so much roster depth there. That's kind of been their calling card over the last handful of seasons. They can get by. Turner's an excellent player, arguably the most valuable position player they have when he's healthy. But I think there's enough of a cushion there that they can get by with him for a couple of months. You know, without totally collapsing. Maybe they're a couple of games behind without him. Maybe they, you know, come out of the gates pretty strong, but I think there's enough roster depth there to get by.
We take a break from this interview with Dane Perry to tell you that the Oxford Exxon podcast is brought to you by Romero Miller State Farm. Everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance, but did you know State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing? Recently, State Farm has had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates. You should give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies, your rental properties, frankly, any policies that you might have. If you have insurance in Tennessee or Mississippi, go to Romero Miller State Farm, 662-893-1212. The podcast is also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you are a business with a high-ticket product or service, that's HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team, they have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown at 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. The podcast is also brought to you by Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. You should know Super Lawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state. So you know you're getting a good one when you get Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford, 662-281-8800. And the podcast is brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, that's the place to go. Grenada Nissan has a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles, great lease deals as well. Go in, tell Gene and Sandy you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast at rebelgrove.com. You'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Now back to our conversation with Dane Perry on the Billy's Pecans Hotline on the Oxford Exxon podcast. It color me crazy. I did not like what the Giants did this offseason. I know Evan Longoria was once a great player. I know that Andrew McCutchen was once a great player. They're still good players, but they both showed signs of wear and tear, I thought, the last couple of years. They add them, and now they're going to start the season without Jeff Samardzija, and more importantly, without Madison Bumgarner. If they don't survive the early portion of the season, I mean, this is a team that lost 90-some-odd games a year ago. What does that season look like in San Francisco around the All-Star break if it's obvious that they're out of it with all of these veteran players, all of that payroll, where it becomes obvious that the window has closed on them? What happens there?
Yeah, I think there is potential to flip some guys if they do get buried in the standings in a hurry, even after they get healthy and they stay well out of contention. What makes it difficult is that with that second wild card in each league, that really lowers the bar for what it takes to get in the postseason. You know, if you're 84, 85 wins, as we've seen, you're in play. You know, if you're on target for 84, 85 wins, you're going to be in play until probably the final week of the season. That's what makes it difficult to pull a trigger on an unplanned rebuild, if you will. You know, we saw the Yankees do it a couple of years ago to very much success with, you know, the Chapman trade and that sort of thing. It's really foreign to the Giants' mentality. They just don't rebuild. I mean, their farm system is garbage right now. They'll get a very high pick in June. Whoever that is will immediately become the best prospect in the system. So it's just hard to say. Any other team, I would say, yeah, they'll probably pivot and do the smart thing. But with the Giants, they just seem to have this disdain for rebuilding. They just don't do it. And I'm not sure they're going to do it now, particularly that they, you know, may still be able to squint and see a pass to the second wild card. So it's a weird situation. On the one hand, we had so many teams tearing it down that I was actually glad to see a team who could justify it going for it.
Sure.
Going for contention. But I just don't know that it makes a lot of sense long term for the Giants.
You know, a team that's kind of in not purgatory, that's the wrong term, but in an interesting spot is the St. Louis Cardinals. I know you keep up with them. Why is Greg Holland not in their bullpen right now?
They just have so many live arms in that system, and I think they want to have kind of a committee approach till it settles out. You know, Jordan Hicks is going to make the roster, and they like him long-term as closer potential. And I just don't think they want to block the path of a lot of guys who they think are going to contribute. And Holland, you know, is a guy who, justifiably from his standpoint, would insist on save opportunities. and probably prices himself differently than a lot of teams do. And I just think that is not, I don't think the Cardinals are in a position to consider that a wise use of resources. They have so many live arms in that system that Greg Holland doesn't really fit a wheelhouse need for them.
They went out and they got Marcell Ozuna, who I think is a terrific player. I think he changes the Cardinals lineup completely. They were devoid a power hitter the last couple of years, and it hurt them in the standings when they went against, you know, teams like the Cubs and even the Brewers to some extent, teams that could outslug them. Ozuna changes that for them. Is he enough?
I don't think they match up with the Cubs. I still think they're a handful of games behind them. I do think the Cardinals are potentially a 90-plus win team. I would consider them the favorite to host the wild card game. Yeah. And they are within range of the Cubs. I still think the Cubs are better, you know, by, like I said, a handful of games. I can see the range of the Cubs' edge over the Cardinals being anywhere from like 3 to 9 games, something like that. But they're back in the discussion, and they certainly are within punching distance of the Cubs. Ozuna, as you mentioned, was a huge part of that. They've had so much turnover in the cleanup spot, you know, ever since really Matt Holliday's prime. So Ozuna was just a huge addition, and I think he moves the needle for them, but I still think the Cubs are the better team on paper.
I agree with you about St. Louis and the wild card. I did my little projection thing over the weekend, and I had St. Louis hosting the wild card game and winning the wild card game. And I think they're right there. When Milwaukee started the offseason, they went out and they got, you know, Yelich, who's another former Marlin, a terrific player. They add Lorenzo Cain, which was a bit of a head-scratcher, but I got it. I was, frankly, at that point, I thought, well, they're all in. They're going to be the team that adds Alex Cobb, Lance Lynn, somebody. They had to add pitching, I thought, you know, to match St. Louis, to match the Cubs. Are you surprised that they didn't? I know they came out and they said, hey, you know, we're keeping our powder dry for July. The only thing is when you're in a division like that with the Cubs, who could be a 100-win team, the Cardinals, who could be a 90-plus win team, your powder might not matter by the end of July, right?
Yeah, I am surprised that the Brewers did not add starting pitching, particularly since they were making noise about pursuing Darvish and then Arrieta and that sort of thing. I mean, that sort of puts a certain budget in mind for you. And considering how, I mean, I still can't get over the contract that Lance Lynn signed. Considering the going rates for him, I find it hard to believe that the Brewers would not have been willing to up that offer significantly. So, yeah, it was a surprise. I mean, they have this glut of outfielders now, and they can maybe – I mean, maybe they are, you know, keeping in mind like a Chris Archer trade or something like that down the line. But you don't want to – you know, you don't want to get beat up in the standings before you make a move like that. I mean, it's a pretty – you know, I see them being well shy of the Cubs. I see them very much in the mix for a wild card berth. But there's, you know, you can kind of see how that's a crowded fray there. I mean, the Cardinals obviously in it. Maybe the Giants are there. Diamondbacks, Rockies, Phillies even after their moves and their young talents that's on the way. You can see that happening. So, you know, there's some teams in the mix there. I'm surprised the Brewers did not do more to address the rotation.
Let's talk about the Cubs. You're in Chicago. There are some whispers that for all the optimism around this team, and it's justifiable, they on paper they look like a great team. There are some whispers that John Lester was not the same John Lester in the spring, that he's lost some velocity off the fastball, that he's going to have to pitch differently. No one really knows if that happens, will he be the same John Lester? Do you hear any of that in Chicago? Is that just Cub fans kind of looking for a reason to panic, or is it possible that you know, he's finally thrown so many innings in Boston, in Chicago, that he's not the same guy?
Yeah, I mean, he's 34, and he was never, you know, he always had a good fastball, but he was never a elite velocity guy. You know, he's got a broad pitch mix. I think he was so good in 2016 that there was probably a bit of good luck going for him, and that was going to correct itself. And I think it maybe overcorrected last season. So I think he's not as good as he was in 2016, but maybe not as bad as he was last season. I think he can still be a useful guy. He's not an ace anymore. I think he's probably a number two, number three guy, but that's useful. I mean, the Cubs have some depth in the rotation there. You know, you kind of speak to what I think could be their trouble spot, and that is collapse potential in the rotation. I mean, Darvish hasn't had a full healthy season since, I think, like 2014. I mean, he was mostly healthy last season. That's a concern. Quintana, you know, he was not quite up to his usual standards last season. Chatwood, who knows how he's going to translate. Lester, we've talked about. I like Hendricks, but, you know, he's a pitch-to-contact guy, and sometimes there can be a lot of variance with those guys. There is some potential trouble spots in the rotation. Now, granted, you kind of have to, you know, you have to stretch here to find trouble spots on the Cubs roster, but if you get a point to one, I think that's it.
Yeah, I actually love Hendricks. Out of that group, I think he's the one that has the highest upside for this coming season. Along those lines,
yeah, he's great.
This yeah, he does so many things that are just remarkable. I love watching him pitch. They have this young lineup. Everyone talks about Bryant. Everyone talks about Rizzo. If the baseball gods came down and said it's one of the other young guys that has the breakout season, is it Contreras? Is it Russell? Is it Baez? Is it Schwarber? Who would you point to?
I'm big on Contreras. I mean, I think he's got a really special bat, particularly by catcher standards. He's also a good defender. You know, you always worry about catchers and how durable they're going to be able to be over the long haul. You know, whether they're going to be, it's you know, it's a, just a position that's tough on the body, and how much can they hold up. But assuming he's a guy who can, you know, catch 130 games, I really like his potential as an MVP candidate in the next couple of seasons. He's just got the power. And again, that bat is just very special by catcher standards. Particularly, you know, as Posey maybe enters the decline phase and Molina's already there, I think we're going to talk about Contreras as, you know, potentially the best catcher of the game. So he's a guy I really like going forward.
I have a bit of a conspiracy theory here that the reason they kept Victor Caratini on the roster for opening day is that they're going to bail on Jason Hayward sooner rather than later. And that,
okay.
And that you're going to see Contreras play more left field then people expect. Schwarber's going to play some right. Hayward's going to sit. I think they're going to try to find a suitor for Jason Hayward in the offseason. They're going to eat contract and move him. I think that Theo Epstein doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Jason Hayward was one. And it's a funny mistake because St. Louis was prepared to give him $200 million. The Nationals were prepared to give him $190 million. There were some really smart baseball people that were ready to make the exact same mistake that Theo Epstein made. But it is what it is. He's lost at the plate. His swing is long and loopy, and that's not how you hit in the major leagues.
Yeah, I mean, Hayward, you know, has always been a tinkerer and always prone to mechanical flaws in his swing and that sort of thing. And I mean, this is all retrospect. I was all in on Hayward as a fan. I wanted him back. So I'm not going to act like I was clued into something nobody else was. But I mean, you know, as you age even a little bit, you know, and lose just a nanosecond off that swing, if you've got a lot of moving parts like Hayward does, it can throw everything off, you know, beyond even what we thought. You know, we knew Hayward had potential to climb with the bat and, you know, go through ups and downs, but nobody saw this level of struggle coming, I don't think. And, he's enough of an impact defender to, you know, make you forget about some of that. But eventually, you know, he's going to start losing a step as he gets towards age 30 and that kind of thing. So, I mean, as far as trading him, you're going to have to eat a lot of contract. That's a big meal they're going to eat.
Oh, it's going to be a big meal.
Particularly when he passes on that opt-out. So, yeah. But, I mean, it's, you know, that's an interesting theory. I'd personally be surprised, but I do enjoy being surprised.
All right, one more division to go, and it's the Nationals, obviously. It's their division to win. It's been their division. Bryce Harper, it's his contract year. He can walk. Most expect that he will walk. I'll ask you about that in a second, but just from a team standpoint, Dusty Baker's out. They made him the scapegoat, unfairly, in my opinion. They bring in Dave Martinez off Joe Madden's staff, who certainly was due an opportunity. The window is closing, obviously, with Harper in his contract year. Do the Nationals, is there too much pressure on them, or is this the year that they break through?
I have them winning the pennant, losing to the Indians in the World Series based on nothing. I mean, based on the fact that I expect both those teams to be in the playoffs.
And, sure.
You know, whatever happens, happens. There's a lot of talent on that roster, as we know. Yeah, they're all in. Excuse me. And that is a lot of pressure. I mean, they ran off a manager who won, I think, 96, 97 games last season, who, you know, is probably a deep run in the playoffs for making the Hall of Fame. They ran that guy off. And like as you mentioned, I'm puzzled by that. I think it was a strange and not particularly wise decision, but that's what they did. Now they're all in on a new culture, a more analytically minded manager who maybe won't make some of the, you know, more rigid mistakes that Baker makes in the postseason. They better hope that happens because they have, you know, put everything in on that. Harper's gone. Daniel Murphy's, I believe, a free agent after this year. Gio Gonzalez. So they're probably going to enter into, if not a deep rebuild, then at least a pivot. Which, so yeah, this is, they're all in on this season, and you can just feel the stories being written if they crap out in the first round again.
Oh God, I can't even imagine. As a guy who follows the Oklahoma City Thunder, it reminds me. It feels so much like Kevin Durant's walk year that it's unbelievable. I mean, the feelings that you get are exactly identical to that. Quick, let's touch on the Phillies. They went out and got Santana. They got Jake Arrieta late in the process, which I thought was a great pickup for them. I was surprised, frankly, Dane, that Atlanta didn't go after Jake Arrieta. I thought he made a ton of sense there. The Braves will bring up Acuna in 3 weeks, and he'll be the big story there. Are either of those teams good enough to get that second wild card?
I would put the Phillies ahead of the Braves right now. They've got young talent closer to being at contributory age, if you will, moving the needle for a major league team. And of course, they fleshed it out with some nice free agent additions. So I think the roster right now that's in place in Philadelphia is stronger than the one in Atlanta. Now Atlanta probably has, once Acuna hits at least, probably has more upside on the rotation in the roster, and that certainly puts them in the mix. I don't think the Braves are going to make the playoffs, but if these young guys start hitting the upper bounds of their projections right away, Dansby Swanson figures it out, and you know, there's so many young guys that have been down that lineup, and that's to say nothing of all the young arms they have on the way. If they get some of those guys contributing right away, then yeah, the Braves have real potential to be in the wild card mix there. Right now, I would put the Phillies as more of a known quantity and thus more likely to be in contention.
So you've got the Indians beating the Nationals in the World Series. If the baseball gods came down and told you, no, Dane, you got them both wrong and you could replace those picks, who would you say is the second team in the AL? Who's the second team in the NL?
I will say Astros and Cubs if I had to go to my second picks. I'm really torn between the Cubs and Dodgers as my second pick, but I have bad feelings about the Dodgers' rotation health, and that's kind of what makes me a little bearish on them. So if you force me to pick other teams, I would leap to the Astros and somewhat cautiously take the Cubs.
All right, just real quick thoughts here, looking ahead to free agency because I can't help it. Clayton Kershaw, is there any chance he opts out in L.A., or is he a Dodger for life?
There's a chance. I think it would probably be as just a business move to get a new contract from L.A. I don't think he would do it with express intentions of leaving, but I can see it. I can see this leverage. I think he winds up back a Dodger. But I think there's a reasonable chance he's a Dodger under a new contract next season and not as an option.
I think most people expect Bryce Harper's not going to be with the Nationals in 2019. If you know that going in, where do you think Bryce Harper is in 2019?
I feel like the Cubs are the obvious pick, but I'm going to say the Dodgers. They have so much money, even compared to the Cubs, they have so much money. It's the kind of move that they will tap their resources to make because Harper is so young for a free agent. You know, I think I've read some indications that there's a pull for him to get back out west. He's a Las Vegas native. I think that's probably a factor. I think the Bryant Harper thing, I'm sure they're friends, but I think that maybe that relationship may be a little overstated. I'm not sure that really drives decisions when you're talking about the kind of money we're talking about. And frankly, I think the Dodgers, I think they probably need that young needle mover in the lineup a bit more than the Cubs do. I think the Cubs may focus their resources on keeping Bryant around long term. So we'll see. I'm going to say the Dodgers, but I don't feel particularly strongly about it.
Same question with Manny Machado.
Manny Machado. That is tough. Machado is trickier. I don't think he's a Yankee. I mean, I know that's kind of kicked around, and I'm going to say Red Sox. I think the Red Sox under Dombrowski, they love older players, established players more often. I think he's going to kind of shove Rafael Devers aside and go after Machado. I'll say Red Sox.
Last thing, I'm curious about this. Chase and I talked about this on the podcast a little bit yesterday. You have so many of these young, attractive, intelligent, marketable baseball players. Chris Bryant, Bryce Harper, Clayton Kershaw, Manny Machado. I mean, there's a long list of guys that back when I'm 48 years old, back when I was a kid, these kinds of guys were household names nationally, not regionally, nationally. Why, in your opinion, has baseball had a harder time establishing some of its preeminent players as national names in the way that the NFL and the NBA has been able to do so successfully?
That's, man, if I knew that, I could make a lot of money in it.
Yeah, I know you could.
But, you know, I don't know. I think part of it is just in the television streaming era, you don't see these guys as much. I mean, you see Kershaw every 5 days at most. You see Mike Trout once every 9 plate appearances when he's not making a catch in the field. Whereas, you know, you see James Harden get, you know, 50, 60 touches a game or what have you. LeBron, yeah. Same thing, you know, yeah. That kind of thing. I mean, I think they're more of a presence. I think basketball resonates more with the younger generation for whatever reason. There's probably a whole lot of reasons to that, but I think that's part of it. And then probably it's just I think baseball has kind of, maybe not to the extent the NFL has, but they've kind of suppressed individuality a bit. I think they're coming out of that, though. I mean, you probably saw the video where Mookie Betts is doing an in-game interview.
It was great.
While he's in the field.
It was great.
Yeah, and there's a ball hit over his head. And
Brian hits a ball to right field. He says, I'm not going to get this, guys. It's great. Yeah. It's little stuff.
I mean, it was wonderful, I mean, obviously you're not going to see that in the regular season, I don't anticipate. But, I mean, sort of like that. I think there's I think MLB is recognizing that this is a weak spot in their organization. They're trying things out like that to, you know, promote some of their star power that's there. And we're going to see more of that kind of thing, I have no doubt. Whether that moves the needle, whether that gets it back to where, I'm 46, I remember the same things you do. You know, so whether it gets back to like it was in our days, I don't know. There's too much competition for attention these days, even beyond sports. But I think they're going to try.
Well, man, I really appreciate the time so much. It's terrific stuff, and thanks for your patience and spending some time with us. Enjoy opening day, and we'll follow your work, and I look forward to it.
All right, Neil. Thanks for having me, man. I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Dane.
Thanks to Dane for giving us an extended amount of time to talk opening day and Major League Baseball season. He is coming to you on the Bullets Pecans Hotline, but the Oxford Exxon Podcast brought to you in part by Brandon White, Keys to Dream Travel, completely free service, specializes in Walt Disney World and Disney Cruise Line vacations, taking the stress out of planning, takes care of dining, fast pass reservations, transportation, and anything else related to your vacation. He's an expert in getting you out of line and onto more rides no matter the crowds. Mention the podcast and get a $25 Disney gift card for booking a vacation. Get that no obligation free quote at Brandon at Keys, KEYS2TO, dreamtravel.com or 901-634-8687. Remember, it is a no obligation free call for him.
Tom Murphy, Dane Perry, and all guests join us on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. At Billy's Pecans, they handle the details. It lets you handle the thank yous. At Billy's Pecans, it's the perfect crunch for every palate, whether it's a gift for a corporate client, presents for the staff, tokens of goodwill for a referral. From 5 to 5,000 orders, Billy's Pecans will handle it all with expertise and excellence, all with their signature Southern style and with items at every price point. You simply can't choose wrong. You can consider the assorted gift bag, the party trio, the pecans and chocolate, or more. Homemade treats, easy ordering, professionally packaged, shipped fresh and direct. It's the process of doing business with Billy's Pecans, and it couldn't be any more satisfying. Billy'sPecans.com or 1-800-624-7404. The podcast also brought to you by the Moonlight Grahams, which will be playing Saturday, April the 28th at World Music Nashville in the Bellevue area at 7 p.m. The Moonlight Grahams are a folk Americana band started by Ole Miss grad John McCann. Tickets are $10. That includes a digital copy of the new album. The digital download cards will be given to you when you arrive. To get those tickets, go to their Facebook page or go to TicketZone.com. Make sure you get your tickets before they sell out. You'll absolutely love it. Remember, their new album, The Moonlight Grahams, is out on Spotify and iTunes. Make sure to follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you like them, spread the word. The show, Saturday, April the 28th, World Music Nashville at 7 p.m. You don't want to miss The Moonlight Grahams.
Podcast also brought to you by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com. They're in Holly Springs. Go check them out for the Sildenafil we've been telling you about. You can get that by filling out a form or give them a call at 662-252-2321. Also, if you're in Oxford, they now operate G&M Pharmacy. They deliver local, give you great service there on South Lamar. Did you see this? Bank of Ann Arbor going all in with their sign.
No, I have not.
And with the in anticipation of the Michigan Loyola Chicago game, the yes. billboards or the signs or whatever for the Bank of Ann Arbor in Michigan, Sister Jean will soon know the difference between heaven and hell, H-A-I-L.
Wow.
Yeah, strong.
That's going strong on Easter weekend, I got to be honest.
You're getting a little freaked out by this whole Easter weekend thing, aren't you?
She's a nun. I'm going to guess.
Like, and not in the figurative sense. She's literally a nun.
She's a nun. I'm going to guess that her relationship with God is better than Jim Harbaugh's. She's closer. She has a direct line of sorts. You got to be careful when you mess with that. You know me and trash talk. You're trash talking a nun.
On Easter weekend.
Bad idea. Literally, you're trash talking a nun on Good Friday on a giant billboard. No. No. That is no.
You're saying if last shot and the ball's in the rim, you know which way it's falling.
I know which way I'm betting. Because she's sitting there clutching the rosary and saying Hail Marys and all the Michigan fans are guzzling beer. Nope. I'm betting on the nun.
Is it possible? Can they get one more?
Sure. They've gotten four. Why can't they get one more? They're playing the night before Easter.
Oh, gosh.
They didn't just beat Kansas State. They mopped the floor with Kansas State. So they saved another miracle. I'm telling you, if I'm Michigan, I don't want the thing coming close down at the end.
She attended Sisters of the Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary in Iowa.
I mean, think about that.
I would never have guessed Iowa.
Sisters of the Charities of the Blessed Virgin Mary. You are messing with purity here. That's not like she attended Southwest Missouri State. Charity, blessed, and virgin, all in the same word. Nope. Be careful. Be careful, Michigan.
Okay.
Wouldn't it be great if it's Loyola versus Kansas in the final? A team of kids that nobody recruited who are playing for a nun versus a team of kids that are on a massive payroll paying for one of the biggest cheats in the game. How cool would that juxtaposition be?
I did see on Twitter going around last night, one of the Kansas fan site, fan Twitter accounts was pointing out all the people that didn't pick them to make the Final Four, like Kansas was some little engine that could all of a sudden. That was good.
You don't get to play that card. You do not get to play that card at Kansas. I mean, look, Villanova probably has a payroll that's seven figures, but they don't yet have that reputation. So you can kind of cheer for them a little bit. Kansas is uncheerable. Unless you're a Kansas fan. And at that point, good for you.
Didn't they literally invent the game? Was it Naismith from Kansas?
Yeah, there was a documentary about getting the original rules of the game, the actual, they're obnoxious. I'll cheer for Villanova. I have nothing against Kansas, just that they're just obnoxious.
Thoughts with Jim Kelly. He had a 12-hour surgery to remove oral cancer and reconstruct the upper jaw. Recently, the quote from the doctor, Dr. Mark Erkin, head and neck surgeon at Mount Sinai West, said in a statement, "We successfully removed Mr. Kelly's cancer from his upper jaw and lymph nodes from his neck. We then reconstructed his upper jaw. Mr. Kelly is resting comfortably post-operatively." So he said the recovery will be extensive, but it appears to, at least as of this point, been a successful procedure. So thoughts and prayers.
Absolutely.
Just kind of seeing that on the internet.
The Loyola basketball Twitter account just said that opening day feeling and then good luck Cubs and White Sox. Kind of hard for me not to cheer for them.
The Ramblers. Your Cubs play the Miami Marlins at 11:30 this morning.
Yes.
You're wearing Cubs attire today. I see.
It's opening day.
It is opening day. The Cardinals play the Mets at 12:10. The Braves play the Phillies at 3:10. Only one game around that 7 o'clock window, I'm looking. Weird scheduling a little bit.
It is kind of weird scheduling. One of the games, the Cincinnati game, got rained out, and that's maybe part of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were supposed to open today with the Nationals.
So Cincinnati doesn't do the whole first pitch thing anymore?
Not anymore.
That stopped.
That's Major League Baseball, said, screw that tradition. I always liked that tradition.
Yeah, I didn't mind that.
First pitch gets thrown in Cincinnati. I liked that. But whatever. I mean, I'm over it.
But what's the negative? Like, who gripes about that to get it changed?
I don't know. I can't imagine that anyone griped about it. What happened was they switched to that Sunday night game for a while. Season always started on Monday.
Okay,
and this is the first year of the new collective bargaining on this, where they're opening several days early because they're building more off days into the schedule.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where you can't play more than 20 days in a row, which seems fair because that's a lot of baseball. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Congrats to Mickey Callaway, by the way. It has to be an incredible feeling this morning. I know you've managed a spring training. It's different. You're putting on the real uni and managing a game that's going to count, and they're probably going to do like planes over the top. And
they're at home at 12:10 against the Cardinals.
All that stuff. You're going to look into the other dugout.
It's going to be a little different when you go to put somebody up in the bullpen in the sixth inning tonight.
Yeah,
versus when you've done it in the past.
For sure.
Every decision is going to be going through your head going, okay.
For sure.
So
it's cool.
Braxton Lee made the Miami opening day roster.
Had a great spring.
Is he the first guy up from that group?
You would know that better than me.
I'd have to think about it for a minute. I hadn't really run through the top of my head, but interesting. Interesting there. So anyway, all right, thanks to Tom Murphy. Thanks to Dane Perry. We'll be back tomorrow with another show, I assume. Are we doing a show tomorrow? Good Friday? Yeah.
It's up to you.
Okay. I have a show tomorrow. coverage tonight from Ole Miss and Arkansas at rebelgrove.com. I'll talk a little bit about Blaine Knight later in the day, and then content that I put up around 9, 9:30 last night. So, cheers. Talk to you tomorrow.